Oh, what a great conversation with Dr. Moss. He is amazing. So I cannot wait for you to really take a listen. If you are somebody who just hasn't really been able to connect with yourself and you're struggling with a mental health thing, but you don't know why and you don't feel authentic and all of this is the episode for you because he is so good and he really just helps you really start to think about communication. And that being the foundation of love and finding your true voice. I mean, this was a really powerful conversation about profound healing and having authenticity and knowing who you are and tapping into what makes you truly human. So I cannot wait for you to listen to this, contact him, work with him, grab his books, all that great stuff. Because when somebody comes on here to drop knowledge, to grow, challenge, and transform your thinking, you guys need to pay attention. All right, here you go. What's up, party people? This is Nina Perez, and this is Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. And you know I go around this amazing planet finding the best humans I can find to come on here to grow, challenge, and transform your thinking. So today I am so honored to welcome a truly transformative voice in the mental health space. And I love what he's about. I was reading his bio. I'm like, wow, this guy is the real deal. This is Dr. Fred Moss. He is a psychiatrist and mental health advocate. And the founder of Welcome to Humanity Movement, which is all about helping people rediscover their authentic voices. Now, over his career, y'all, he has cared for over 40,000 patients. Okay. This is when I say somebody is for real, like that's a lot of work. Okay. He has authored two incredible books and he's created courses that help people go from silent to impactful communication. And you guys know that we try to really just bring forth different ways of thinking and things that maybe you haven't thought about. And Dr. Fred believes that communication is the foundation of love and that finding and sharing your true voice can lead to profound healing. So I wanted him here because I love conversations like this where you can really teach us something, Dr. Fred, because communication is lost. And I'm sure you're probably seeing maybe some trends, whether it's coming back or not sure. But I know that throughout the years, I just feel like it's been dwindling, especially with texting and social media and all that kind of stuff. So Dr. Fred, welcome to Straight Talk. How are you?
It's great to be here. Thanks, Nina. Yeah, you bring up some really great points about communication, you know, and it's funny, you know, people talk about me teaching, but I'm not really teaching. I'm really helping you rediscover what you already knew. This is not something new that communication is at the center of healing. This is all that we do. This is all that's important. This is where we strive to. This is who we, who we long to be with is people who we can connect with, people who we can communicate with. The whole point of a podcast, in fact, is to put us together so that we can connect. And then the whole point of us connecting is that maybe our connection will connect with other people. In the end, the whole thing is about connection. So it's not like I made something up and I'm teaching something new to people. I'm just going really back to the truth. This is something we knew when we were children. I mean, something we knew when we arrived here. It was very important for us to be, you know, social animals, as they say, or they actually, put ourselves in position where we could find people who understood us or who resonated with us or, you know, in the general, who connected to us. And as a psychiatrist, that also is not anything new. I mean, ultimately, what we're talking about, and people come to a psychiatrist, they usually come because they know something is wrong with them. Mm-hmm. It's funny, with psychiatry, different than other fields, if you tell somebody they're okay, they actually get angry. It's really funny. And as far as most medical fields, if an oncologist or, you know, radiologist or even a regular family practice physician tells you you're okay, you're like, cool. If a psychiatrist tells you're okay, you're like, I'm going next door to find me a real doc who can tell me what's wrong with me. And, you know, we're all very certain that there's something wrong with us because we have the audacity to compare our insides with everybody's outside.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you know, what happened is early on in my life, I was a healer. Early on, I was called on. I mean, maybe you could say even for the first minute I arrived. I had two brothers, 10 and 14 years older than me, and I had my parents. And from what I understand, there was a fair amount of chaos, disarray, and conflict going on in my home when I arrived. And that I was called on to really be the bundle of joy that brought love and connection back to my family. And apparently I did a really good job with that for a couple years. Great. I'm not sure that it's been consistent for 66 years, but I was with my brother and sister yesterday. We had a great time over the holiday. And my sister's younger than me. This is my brother, 10 years older than me, that I was with. And, we had a wonderful time, but it's been a long ride. We've had the whole life thing and had our dips and turns. But ultimately, what my goal was and where I was most enchanted was in the world of communication. I literally remember being in my playpen and watching my brothers and my parents talk to each other and knowing and hoping that one day I would become a communicator as well. And, they taught me how to be pretty precocious. They taught me how to read or how to write, how to do simple math. Excuse me. They taught me like different things that different kindergartens probably didn't know. So when I arrived back in, elementary school, I knew more than, a lot of people about like the world. I knew a little bit about sex, a little bit about drugs, a little bit about, rock and roll, a little bit about war protests, a little bit about writing and reading and math and the whole thing. And so I was like the smartest kid in class. It wasn't because I was smart. It was because I was given all the hints before I even arrived. Mm. And I was a talker. I was like, I was like that kid. You're like talked way too much because I was bored. And then, I knew so much as compared to my peers in my age group. But I really just wanted to communicate. And every time I talked, I would be told to sit down, be quiet, and do what the teacher says and, do it just like the teacher. And that just seemed like the last thing from an open discourse. But it was frustrating. And, no elementary school teacher has ever forgotten having Fred as a student. I'm quite sure of that. And, I went through school with that process, just continually like looking for instruction and direction on how to communicate. And it wasn't going to happen in elementary school. So I figured, well, maybe junior high. And of course, it got a little worse in junior high where you really got to sit down and be quiet. And then the same thing happened in high school. It got a little worse. The clamps got tighter. And, I was just like in school, the object was to sit there and just watch and listen and then mimic and, mock whatever's going on up there. And the closer I could do it, they'd allow me to pass with a high grade. So I went through that nonsense for a while, still looking for, as we all did, like still looking for where are we going to communicate? Where are we going to learn? And, maybe it's a college after all. That's where the protests were happening. There must be people communicating there. And so it was only 40 miles down the road, and they have really beautiful football helmets. So I decided to go to the University of Michigan. And I went there for like a year and a half. And, it was in the engineering department. I didn't even know what an engineer was when I entered that school. I thought it was a dude on the back of a train. It was like, I don't know. So I lasted for like a year and a half and then just dropped out because communication wasn't going to happen in school. I got on a Greyhound bus and I came all the way here from Detroit. I'm actually in the city right this very second where I came to at that time. I'm in Berkeley, California as we speak. And that's where I took the Greyhound bus all the way from Detroit where I was living then and Detroit/Ann Arbor all the way down here to Berkeley so I could find myself. And it is kind of wild that this is the city, no kidding. I'm sitting in the middle of Berkeley, California, and that's where I came. And I stayed in the youth hostel for much of that summer. I learned a whole lot about who I was and, find myself is what my goal was. And I did find a lot about myself in an unsustainable way. And my family encouraged me to come back to school, so I could get a real job or something like that, I guess.
Yeah,
back to school I went because there was this new industry opening up and my family thought I had the aptitude for it and I should try it. And the name of the industry was computers. So the only computer that was out there in Michigan was at the University of Michigan. So I had to re-enroll and re-register back into the University of Michigan. And they let me in kindly. And all of a sudden I was working in that computer lab. It was a big 2-acre facility every day, punch cards and batch jobs, Fortran, COBOL, the whole thing. And it's like, I'm not doing this for the rest of my life either. So I lasted for a term or two and I discontinued and I left and dropped out one more time. And, you know, this time when I dropped out, I promised that I would never go back to school again. Never under any conditions go to university. And my family's like, well,
no, go ahead. No, no, I was going to say that that's so interesting, right? And because you're a psychiatrist, so you probably were leading there. I was just wondering, like, why out of all the communication ways you could have went, why psychiatry, right? Because you could have been a journalist. You could have been a lot of people communicating different ways. So you were probably going there, but I was just very curious. My brain was going there.
Yeah, no problem. So, you know, when I dropped out and said that, my mom said she was okay with that, but you got to get a job. You know, moms, they say stuff like that. So I was like, okay, let's see what we can do. And she got me some applications for civil service jobs. And there was two jobs available, one in the unemployment office and as a, you know, like working behind the desk or something. Mm-hmm. And the other one was a child care worker at a state mental health facility for adolescent boys. And that one was coming on a little bit sooner. That one had 3 weeks orientation where I get paid full time. And I was like, well, 3 weeks orientation, getting paid full time, I could take three paychecks, buy myself a Volkswagen, drive around the country and figure out what my life is about. I don't ever have to even go onto the floors. And that's what my full intention was during orientation, during all 3 weeks, just sit there, doodle, hang in there, get myself three paychecks and buy a car.
That's so funny.
On the fourth week, my friend Paul, who was orienting with me, he's like encouraged me to go up to the floors. And we went up. I was really afraid that Monday morning. And we went up to the floors and did what we did. And it kind of like, you know, sort of washed over me. I was interested. I lasted anyways. I didn't get beaten up. And when a week or two later, I was still there. And I was kept on thinking the same thing, which is I'm going to quit in 3 weeks. And each time I, you know, went back to work, it was like, I'm going to quit in 3 weeks. And one more week of paycheck, one more week of communicating, because this is where I really learned that communicating with these kids was the heart of the action was. And, you know, these kids weren't really kids. They were 6 or 7 years younger than me. They're just human beings caught up wherever they were caught up, just like we all are. And, you know, it wasn't even clear who was in the greater, who was, you know, being confined by more us or them. But so, I really learned how to communicate over those next several months, and I really learned how to be a pretty good childcare worker. And over the next, you know, several years, I stayed on as a childcare worker, eventually realizing that I didn't want to retire as a childcare worker. And the thing I hated about that job was psychiatry. I hated the future of psychiatry. I hated the way the psychiatrists manage that. I hated the way that, you know, we'd call the psychiatrists and they'd interview the child, you know, like Timmy and Tony would be in a tussle or Jimmy would be up too late. We'd call him. He'd interview the child for a few seconds and interview us for a couple more seconds and then go in the nursing office and write something in the chart. And then we'd have to go retrieve the child and hold him down against his will and jam him full of some injectable antipsychotic, anti-anxiety cocktail. And if he was in a stupor for the next day, we would call that a success story. And I just saw the future and just thought, that's not what I'm about. So I'm going to go in there and teach communication and be that kind of guy as a psychiatrist. And my brother was already a psychiatrist, my 14-year-old brother. And I knew that there was a pathway and I knew how, you know, sort of how to do it. So back to school, I went to finish off my undergraduate degree and, you know, fully intending to be a psychiatrist. I applied to many medical schools and got accepted at one in the middle of Chicago, Illinois, called Northwestern University. And I had a great time in Chicago for 5 years and, again, learned how to communicate in the streets of Chicago, not so much in medical school, for sure. I love Chicago, so shout out to Chicago. And, you know, then before too long, I was a child and adolescent psychiatrist. And, you know, I'd gone through the fellowship and everything, and here I was and spat out as one. And life had changed already. And psychiatry had become a diagnosing, you know, medicating field already. And it was the last thing that I wanted to do, as you can imagine, was to diagnose.
Right.
But that's what I was there to do, is typecast. So I soul sacrifice and heartache every day as I did stuff that I didn't think was right. And I did it because, you know, 13 years sunken costs and time to, you know, step up and weasel my way into bringing communication into a field that should be all about communication.
Right.
But right. I did everything I could to be a communicator. And with all my patients, I saw patients from all walks of life, all ages, all modalities. I worked in every single modality known to Western medicine, psychiatry. That's how I get so many patients. And I was really looking around for the job that worked for me. That's why I've gotten, that's why I have such vast experiences. You could say I stopped in, checked it out, and left, you know, and I did that so many times, so many hundreds of times, literally hundreds of times. And ultimately, I was just hanging on to where can communication fit in here. Mm. And in 2006, I finally had had enough of that lifestyle. The heartache and soul sacrifice was a little too much. So I started doing something which was thought to be pretty radical, but I didn't think so at the time. And that is, you know, I started taking people off of medication.
I was going to ask about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I started doing mm-hmm. that in 2006, and it was wonderful. You know, it was like I really learned at that time that people not only got better when I took them off medicine, but they got way better, and usually their diagnosis totally disappeared, which suggested to me that the medicines were actually causing the symptoms they're marketed to treat. And mm-hmm. I saw that over and over again and really learned it firsthand. So it was like, well, I should tell everybody this, you know, scream from the mountaintops. And that, you know, I realized fairly soon that being violent about about these kind of things doesn't really work. So I had to learn how to calm it down. Like, what am I really going to do? And over the next several years, that's when I started traveling around the country. I kind of let my practice close because I took so many people off medicine. They got better and they didn't need psychiatry anymore.
I freaking love that. Yeah, I love really, that so much.
Really
true.
Really true. And, you know, instead I started doing some traveling work and seeing how psychiatry is delivered around the country. And it's delivered, you know, very same, by the way. It's uniform in every state.
Yeah.
And so this idea of having Jimmy, you know, on the ground with injecting him in the morning with some sort of chemical restraint, it's still happening everywhere in all the hospitals everywhere. Yeah. Like it's happened hundreds of times this morning for sure already. No kidding. Like it's not a rare occurrence at all. And you know, I just didn't like that. It was barbaric. I couldn't really manage it. You know, and now I was actually being asked to write the order to make that happen, not just watch it, not just be part of it, but to be responsible for it. I was like, wow, that's not acceptable.
Talk about going against your own, you know, moral standing, right? That's really tough. Your
level
journey,
your
journey is quite amazing, right? So I know that it challenged you, right? This was a challenge now to go over the norms, right? Of overdiagnosing, over medication, all that kind of stuff. So I'm just wondering, like for somebody who's listening right now and is probably going or in the system going through this, right? Like, I even have family members that have been going through psychiatrists for like 20 something years and have not gotten better. And I'm like,
that's actually built. That is the standard. And that is what it's built.
Yeah. And I even asked the question and they kind of got mad at me, but I'm like, if you're there going 20 years and anything that you do in life, if you're doing something for 20 years and it doesn't work, don't you think it's time for a change? And that didn't go over well, but I'm wondering what advice would you give someone who is struggling, right, with that current mental health system to advocate more for their holistic care? How do they go about doing that?
Well, it's really interesting. As it turns out, you don't, every time you go to the doctor or take medicine, no one drags you there, more than likely, unless you're under probate. Yeah. So the truth is, there's nothing you really have to do. I mean, the first thing you have to just acknowledge is there might be nothing wrong with you. And that's really an important piece. We're all fairly certain that there's something wrong with us because we have the audacity to compare our insides with everybody's outsides. And we think, oh, yeah. But it's such a normal human trait to think there's something wrong with you that if you think there's something wrong with you, you're actually probably normal, because that's exactly what people think, is that there's something, you know, you think there's something wrong with you. I think there's something wrong with me. That's just how natural human conditioning goes. So if I was to give anybody any advice, it's to understand that no one is holding you down to make you keep that, you know, keep that medicine coming. And no one is holding you down to make you even go to a psychiatrist or go to a doctor. So when I can work myself out of a job, that's a success story for me. You know, when I can get to the point where as a psychiatrist, I can coach someone into understanding that all the discomfort and all the pain, all the misery, all the imbalance, all the unpleasantness of being human comes with being human. This is what it looks like to be human. Mm-hmm. So even if you're highly anxious, highly depressed, if you feel immobilized, incapacitated, if you're afraid, if you're terrified, if you're awkward, if you're late on your, you know, late on your deadlines, if you're been mean to your spouse, if you're feeling uneasy or impatient, or, you know, if you're feeling confused or aimless, all these negative vibration experiences. Hello, welcome to humanity. This is what we got here. This is called life. And it really is called life. Now, you can keep doing it. You can absolutely keep doing it. If you want to hang on to your depression and call it your every moment lifestyle, that's up to you completely. Is there 100 reasons to be depressed? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Are there 100 reasons to be nervous? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Are there 100 reasons to be terrified?
Of course.
100%. Are there 100 reasons to be aimless? For sure. Confused? Absolutely. Distracted? For sure. Awkward? 100%. You have all your reasons. There's no problem.
Yeah.
Once you get that experience, you can hang on to it and call it yourself if you want. But there are really tools and practices that can release you from calling that yourself. That's one of the choices of life. You know, you pick on the nasty stuff going on and then become that and be all about that and have that be who you are. You have that choice. Or you can really release yourself from that, no kidding, without using medications, which actually don't do it. Medications perpetuate, they induce, increase. They actually cause the symptoms they're marketed to treat. This is really, really interesting to get that. Now, it's not like medicines are evil. You didn't have to take them. Medicines aren't evil. They're like benign. They're like inert.
Right. It just is, right? They just are.
You don't get mad at rat poison, and you know it does what it does.
Right.
And so, if you really got in the first point that your discomfort, your imbalance, your dysfunction, your difficulties do not mean there's something wrong with you, then you won't have to go to a psychiatrist to get yourself fixed. And if you do go to a psychiatrist, you can bet 100% that you're going to get a psychiatric diagnosis that day. Why? Because psychiatric insurance doesn't pay for well patients. So a doctor needs to give you a secondary diagnosis, a primary diagnosis. So you're going to get one, whatever it is. And he could say, you know, what on that first visit, you have a psychiatric diagnosis. And you know, they're going to say, well, watered it down. We give you a broad one, like adjustment disorder is the most common fudge factor out there in the psychiatric field. So we give you 309.28, and then we call you adjustment disorder, and maybe that won't screw up your efforts to get a job down the road, you know, or something like that. But it's staying with you. And we get this diagnosis, we get this label, and then we get a treatment plan and a set of medications. And a therapy of some sort that is actually perpetuates the symptoms are marketed to treat. That's the whole intention. So why does someone go to a psychiatrist for 20 years? Because that's exactly the way the system is built to manage. Perpetual patients. That's all. That's how we do it.
Yeah.
And if you come in after you start a therapy, if you're worse, even if it's because of the therapy, that won't be diagnosed as the therapy causing that, of course, because that takes something. So instead, people will add, increase, or change your therapy or your medicine. And that's how people will do it if you come in worse. No one will think, okay, let's stop the treatment altogether and see if you get better. That isn't how we think. We think about adding, increasing, and changing the treatment.
Yeah. Wow. You dropped so much knowledge. Oh my God, my brain is going to explode. Okay. Now, I know that in your book, Find Your True Voice, you emphasize like creativity and self-expression, right? As this path to healing. Is that really, you know, is that really where you're going? Like, is that what you talk about most, or is that what you're trying to help people?
The first book was A Creative Eight, Healing Through Creativity and Self-Expression. The second book was Find Your True Voice. And they're both geared to the same thing, which is, you know, getting to a space where you're presenting yourself as a genuine, authentic, open, honest, core, core person whose actions are consistent with the words and thoughts. And, you know, that's what that is. And, you know, using creativity in form of art, music, dancing, singing, drama, cooking, writing, gardening, really helps us. Actually, I noticed that when we do those things, whatever symptoms we thought we had just disappear. And then you have a choice when you're done with those things, whether or not to go back to the symptoms that were there when, you know, when before you started drawing or before you started singing or before you started gardening. And it's an actual choice to snap back. You know, you can snap back and you may even get the urge to snap back, but you absolutely don't have to. That was what that book talks about. Find Your True Voice is about moving the things out of the way that were in the way of you being your honest to goodness, authentic self. You know, we have learned over the years, right back there from conventional education, how to be someone that we're not in order to protect the person that we are. And we don't have to keep doing that. You know, it's a big lie, actually. And we know we're lying and we know we're not being the person we know ourselves to be. And, you know, it even reaches the point that some of us actually say things that even we don't believe. That is so absurd. That is so ludicrous, so preposterous, so human. That is just so human. And can we rid ourselves of that habit so that we can actually be authentic with the people that matter to us and then have that stretch out to be authentic with everyone? Because if we can be authentic, then we have a capacity to create authenticity for others. And we have the capacity to listen to people that are, you know, diametrically opposed to us in very important issues, for instance, like, I don't know, let's say elections or let's say vaccines or let's say, you know, there are places where diametric opposition does possibly exist, divisive issues that are set up to split us. And we don't have to do that. If we're authentic, have you noticed you can actually listen to somebody who's got a differing opinion as long as they're coming from an authentic standpoint?
That
can actually tolerate and maybe even be curious about what they're saying, even if they disagree 100% with what you have to say. So authenticity is way more powerful than acceptance and agreement. So
how do we get to the point of authenticity, though, Dr. Fred? Like, I think that's the challenge, right? Like, how do we show up authentically? Because I think one of the things that happens to us as humans is we also worry about the judgment that'll come, the shutting down that'll come, the cancellations that'll come, whatever.
Exactly.
What's like the first step to get to that authentic place?
Courage, you know, you just start doing it. You start taking, you know what you're missing. You know, you know when you're saying stuff that you don't really believe. You know when you're not talking and you should. You know when you're talking and you shouldn't. You know when you're saying something just to stay in a group or be afraid to be thrown off the island. You know all that. And it's a matter of having courage, taking incremental steps initially with the people in your inner circle and actually saying things you haven't said before that are consistent with who you really are. And being different than you've been, and so that is consistent with who you really are, and it's all in practice. You know, Henry David Thoreau, he said, the mass of men go through life in quiet desperation and go to their graves with their songs still in them. And I think that's like the most tragic thing that a human can do is to live a life and have nobody ever know them. And it's an object of, you know, true voice. No one will know you. No one will hear you if you don't use your voice, and no one will know you if you don't use your true voice. So, you know, that's really what's here to do.
You know, and it just listening to your story from the beginning as well, it seems like that was always innate in you as well, right? Like you were always thinking about how you're going to communicate.
Exactly.
You went to college, but then didn't feel like it. You didn't feel like going back, but you did. Like, you seem like you are always paving your own road, Dr. Fred, right? So I'm just wondering, for people who are deeply in this place of people pleasing and not being or being too afraid to say what they speak. I mean, this, you touched a little bit on, you know, things that cause to divide us, right? Like the political landscape, all that kind of stuff that happened. I mean, I've lost friends because I just saw things a little bit differently. Right. And I'm just like, I was like, maybe I shouldn't say that. Maybe I should just be careful. Maybe blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, but wait, if I can't show up like me, then what's the point? I don't really want to do that, you know?
Exactly.
So, yeah. So, okay. So I know we got to start wrapping up, and I want to keep you forever because your freaking brain is amazing. And I love your authenticity.
Thank you.
So I just want to like wrap up by having people know, well, first of all, do you work with people still, or do you just travel the world?
Do some coaching, but I'm really looking for creating community these days and, you know, large scale coaching, you know, because the message is pretty clear and it hits people exactly what we already knew. Little Freddie knew it when he was 3 years old in the playpen, and you know it too since you were 3 years old. I'm not saying anything that any journals could actually teach us. That's the thing. It's just rediscovering the truth. I'd be glad to stay on. I do have to go. And it's important that, you know, the way to get a hold of me is, you know, Dr. Fred, drfred360.com. You can see all my podcasts. You can see all the, there's a number of freebies there. And there's, you can see where some keynote speaking I've done. You can get access to my books. You can create a discovery call.
Good.
There's a lot of cool things there. And then welcome to humanity.net is the broader website. And then I chill around on the platforms every so often. I still hang out on Facebook. I'm like feel guilty about that. I hate that place, but I do hang out a little bit in Facebook. Man, I like LinkedIn. I like LinkedIn enough so you can find me there as well. And you know, awesome. We post here and there every day, and I'm very eager to assist people and to do so on a large scale.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, you're a cool dude. You're a cool dude. I really like you. I like what you're about. I really do. Thank you for being here. And thank you for sharing with Straight Talkers. You are a blessing.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Nina.
All right, guys. I'm going to make sure to put all of Dr. Fred's things below so that you don't miss a freaking thing. I really am honored that he came on here. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up. And I want you to follow him. So I'm going to make sure I list everything below. Grab his book. Get into his community. Contact him. All of that great stuff. He is authentic for sure. I love you guys so much. This is Nina Perez. Straight Talk. No sugar added. Until next time. Thank you.